Good morning and welcome to Tony Sanders Outdoors on Talk Radio 102.3 FM, the Talk Monster. You may notice a certain absence, the namesake of this show. That would be Tony Sanders, who is in Nashville today working with the Friends of the NRA. They are working to help fund a lot of the youth shooting programs, and all the members of the Friends of the NRA have gotten together to decide which groups are going to receive funding. So Tony is working hard for all those youth shooting sports up in Nashville. So feel free to give the Trout Professor a call at 267-1023 or 1-888-779-TALK. I have a special guest in with me today. I have Will Lillard of Will Lillard Fly Fishing Expeditions, who is going to be talking some fly fishing and telling us about fly fishing opportunities out west and here in the east. We have breaking fishing news. We have some hunting news. We have some wild outdoors news. We have idiots outside, and we have news from the outdoor apocalypse to cover today. So we have got a full show, and we will also hit your calendar of outdoor events here in the very near future. But first, we have on with us Will Lillard. How are you, Will?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, glad to have you here. Now, you have a fly fishing expeditions company.
That's right.
And you are here for one day?
I'm here in Chattanooga. I got here on Wednesday, and I'm here through Sunday.
Okay. And today, tell everybody what you're doing today.
Today I'll be at Outdoor Chattanooga. I've got a fly tying and fly fishing class that we're hosting through Outdoor Chattanooga. It's from 10 to 2. And I believe all 10 spots are full, but there is a wait list, and who knows, some people might drop out. So if you're interested, give Outdoor Chattanooga a call, but it's going to be an introduction to fly fishing and fly tying. We'll tie up some woolly buggers, a couple other patterns, and then learn about all the knots you need to tie, some casting basics, and everything you need to know to get out on the river.
All right. And where is that going to be? Do you know?
That's in Coolidge Park.
Okay, great. All right. Now, you are from North Carolina, you said, or based out of North Carolina.
Yeah, our company is based out of Western North Carolina, just outside of Asheville, a little town called Brevard, which sits right on the Davidson River there. It's, you know, right at the headwaters of some of the best trout fishing in North Carolina.
Yeah, I've fished the Davidson several times. Those fish can be very, very close-lipped, shall we say.
Yes, yeah. They get a lot of pressure there on the Davidson. There's a couple different sections, but you most likely fish up near the hatchery. And you can always see some really big fish there, but they're not always eating. So it can be a little frustrating there. They eat a lot of really tiny midges. And
so you're saying they've seen a lot of flies.
They've seen a lot of flies. You might be the trout professor, but those trout have their PhD, so
I would not doubt that at all. Because when I went there, they were very, very tight-lipped.
Yes, yes.
Now, Brevard, they have some sort of, don't they have some weird squirrel?
They do. They have a white squirrel there.
Now it's not an albino.
It's a white squirrel. The story is it showed up with a traveling circus, and one got loose, and now there's white squirrels running all over the place in downtown Brevard. They even have a white squirrel festival.
Do they taste any different? I'm just curious.
I'm not sure. I've never had one, actually, but they look just like a regular squirrel, but white.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I knew I'd seen some weird
regular gray squirrel, yeah.
I knew I'd seen some weird critter in the area over there. Now, you do expeditions, which we'll get into a little bit more, but you do expeditions both in the east here in North Carolina and in Colorado.
That's right. That's right.
And basically, you've got something for everybody.
We've got, our specialty is our teen fly fishing expeditions. Basically, they're a fly fishing summer camp, for lack of a better word, but it's a combination of backpacking, fly fishing, and also stewardship on all of our trips. We do 12 to 18 hours of community service, volunteering with organizations like Trout Unlimited, the National Forest Service, or in some examples, local conservation organizations. And our trips range anywhere from 12 to 18 days. But the other half of our company is custom trips. So we do anything from family trips to custom trips for schools or just groups of friends that want to go out and do a fly fishing trip.
But mainly focusing, but a lot of your focus is on teens and youth.
That's right. Our mission is getting future generations of fly fishermen involved in the sport and teaching a environmental ethic and the importance of stewardship.
Well, that's really great. That is great. If you have any questions for us, give us a call, 267-1023, 267-1023, and we will talk about anything you want to talk about. But if you don't call in, we're going to talk about fly fishing. So there you go. Let me see here. Let me go over a little bit of what's going on today in the outdoors. Today, out at Sportsman's Warehouse at 153 and Lee Highway, Reloading Basics with David Miller. If you have any interest in reloading, go to this program. David Miller has forgotten more about reloading than any of us will ever know. He is an expert when it comes to reloading. That program is going to be from 1:30 to 3:30 out at Sportsman's Warehouse. Major note here, folks. Major note. All Tennessee hunting and fishing licenses expire this coming Thursday. We'll just edit that out. This isn't live or anything. We'll
not sure if that's going to work or not, but we'll go with it.
I appreciate it. Thanks. This Thursday, February 28th, all hunting and fishing licenses do expire. So be sure and have your new license before you head out on the water. Don't want to get caught. And for those of you, now would be a great time to purchase a sportsman's license, if that is an option for you. Also coming up Saturday, the National Wild Turkey Federation Cherokee Chapter is having their banquet at 5:30 p.m. at Chester Frost. We had Don Ocean a couple of weeks ago. And the following Saturday is the SCI banquet at the Chattanooga Convention Center, also at 5:30. So a lot going on in the outdoors. We'll catch up with a few more things that are going on. But before we do, I've got a question about this. Could you set up a trip for like a father and son? Could you set up something like that? And if so, where would be a potential destination?
That's a great question. We definitely do a lot of father-son trips. We even have a father-son trip that we offer every year that's open enrollment, and we get a group of different fathers and sons that come out to Colorado, and we do a six-night trip there. And that one's based out of southwest Colorado, so the participants, all fathers and sons, fly into Denver Airport, and we pick them all up in our big van, and we head down to the Crested Butte, Colorado area, which is right on the Gunnison River, which is pretty well known for its real nice trophy brown and rainbow trout, and we do 7 days of fishing there pretty much. We start off on a private ranch, and we fish there. They got over a mile of private water there, and they've got two spring-fed ponds with some real trophy trout in there, so we start off the fishing there, and then we head into some backcountry. We ride horseback up into some high alpine lakes in Colorado there, fish for some native cutthroat trout, which if you haven't caught one before, I definitely recommend it. There's some really beautiful fish. And we end that trip with some float fishing on the Gunnison River with guides from, you know, including myself and some other local guides from Crested Butte Anglers. But that trip is just one example of some father-son trips that we do. We do a lot of custom trips for just maybe one father or son who's looking to put together a trip for themselves. Or for another example is we're doing a custom trip this spring for a group of fathers who their sons went on a summer camp with me last year, and they're all graduating from high school this year, so they wanted to do a special graduation present for them. And this June, it's a group of dads from Memphis University School over in Memphis, taking their sons on a river rafting and fly fishing trip on the Green River in Utah. And I'll be organizing that for them, and we'll be floating for 3 days, fishing for 3 days. And so really, you know, we're based out of Western North Carolina. We have a base in Southwest Colorado, but we help put together trips in Colorado, North Carolina, Montana, Wyoming. We've got a lodge we work with in Alaska, so we do trips all over, and we can really help organize a trip. You know, as long as it's got young people involved, we want to help make it the best trip possible. So,
well, how can people find you and get a hold of you?
The best way to get a hold of me is via our website. Our website is LillardFlyFishing.com, and Lillard is spelled L as in Larry, I-L-L-A-R-D. So just LillardFlyFishing.com, and we've got all of our contact info on there. But you can also give us a call at 828-577-8204.
That's really great. Now tell us a little bit about yourself. Now you have guided in the past, but you still guide, but you focus on this. But tell us a little bit about yourself. What did you do before that?
Well, you know, after graduating from college in New Jersey, I played lacrosse and went to school in New Jersey and decided to move out west. I'd spent a lot of time growing up out in Colorado fishing with my parents and family, so I headed out to Crested Butte, Colorado, and started working as a fly fishing guide on the Gunnison River, and I had a great time out there, but realized most of my clients were older gentlemen, mostly from Texas, like yourself, but...
Wait a minute. Are you saying old? Are you implying that I'm older?
No, like from Texas.
Oh, okay, because you need to clarify that.
Yes. But I got a couple of groups of kids who came out, mostly with their parents, and their parents wanted to send them on a fishing trip, and I had so much fun working with those kids and leading trips for them that became my focus at the guide shop. Anytime a kid group came in, my manager, you know, would put them with me, and then I also started working with another company in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, called Wilderness Ventures, that does backpacking trips for teens. And they also offer one fly fishing trip, and I got the job of leading that one. And it was a great trip. It was based out of Jackson Hole, Wyoming. We fished in Yellowstone and traveled all over state fishing. And I had so much fun leading that trip, and so did the kids that were on that trip, that I contacted the owner of Wilderness Ventures and said, hey, I think we need to do some more fly fishing trips. And he didn't see a market in it because the fly fishing trips, as they were the lowest enrolled trips out of all the trips he offered. So I forgot about it for a couple of years and started to decide what I wanted to do as a real job. You know, guiding got a little old after a while. So I went back to school and got my master's in environmental conservation education. I knew that I wanted to work in the outdoors. I wanted to inspire future generations of conservationists. So I went to school at NYU up in New York City and quickly realized while I was at NYU was that growing up as a hunter and fisherman, I was either going to have to bite my tongue a lot with the professors and students I had at NYU. They weren't very open to hunting and fishing as a way of teaching conservation, or I had to really educate myself and be an advocate for our sports. So I started to do a lot of research on hunting and fishing and how it can teach conservation. And you know, I found out some really interesting facts, like 98% of the funding for state, local, and federal conservation organizations comes from the sales of hunting and fishing licenses, and did some more research and found that, you know, we're losing, or between 1993 and 1996, we lost 1 million participants in fishing due to a lack of enrollment of that younger generation. So I started to kind of develop Lillard Fly Fishing Expeditions as a way to get that younger generation involved and encourage them to become fly fishermen and conservationists. So,
all right. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about inspiring the youth, and we'll talk about what do you think is preventing them when we come back from these commercial messages. You've been listening to Tony Sanders Outdoors on Talk Radio WGOW.
I tell you why I can't find you. Every time I go out to your place, you gone fishing.
How you know?
Well, there's a sign upon your door.
Uh-huh.
Gone fishing.
I'm real gone, man.
You ain't working anymore.
Could be.
There's your
I'd like to go fishing.
Yeah. Sounds nice to me.
Where you want to just bag this whole radio thing and go hit the water?
Looks like it would be a good day for fishing out there.
Well, then I would have to do an hour and a half on the outdoors, which I hardly ever even hang out in the outdoors, let alone talk about it for an hour and a half. So
you went outdoors. I mean, you had to go outdoors to get here.
Yeah, I know. It sucked. So far away from my bed, man.
I know it. It's too early in the morning. I'm the Trout Professor, and I'm sitting in for your host, Tony Sanders, who is in Nashville working hard for Friends of the NRA. So feel free to give me a call, 267-1023. Our special guest in the house, Will Lillard. Will Lillard, Fly Fishing Expeditions. We've been talking a little bit of fly fishing this morning, but give us a call. We'll talk about anything you want to. Before the break, we were talking about how you think or how you've seen a decrease in the number of youth participating in outdoor activities, whether it be hunting or fishing. Why do you think that is?
You know, I think there's a lot of different reasons. The easy one to point to is obviously technology. You know, most people, when I talk about this, they say, oh, well, it's because they're on the internet too much, or that it's because they have their iPhones and they can have a fishing app on their iPhone. Why go actual fishing? And I think that's part of it, but there's a lot more to it than that. I think there's just a generational gap. When I travel all over the country and I try to recruit kids for our fly fishing summer camps and go to different schools, set up tables during lunch, I talk with kids about fly fishing, and the number one response I always get is, oh, my grandfather is a fly fisherman. And I think there's just a skip between the grandfathers that fly fish and the dads that fly fish. They just don't have somebody to teach them anymore. That the grandfathers are getting old. Their parents never picked it up because they're too busy trying to make ends meet, and they don't have somebody to teach them. There's definitely not a lack of interest out there when I go to these schools. I meet tons and tons of kids who say, oh, I've never done it, but I've always wanted to try. I think the number one reason is accessibility and somebody to teach them. It's harder to find a place to go fishing these days. You know, the rivers have gotten a little mucked up in a lot of areas, and that's starting to change. There's a lot of recovery that's going on, and you can find trout in a lot of places you couldn't 10 years ago now. But it's harder to find those places, and there's just not as many people out there to teach them.
Now, you mentioned earlier you had to kind of bite your tongue when you were at NYU, a very prestigious institution of higher learning.
Mm-hmm.
Not known for their, shall we say, known for their educational benefits, but not known for their devotion to conservatism, per se.
Yes, it's definitely not a conservative institute by any means.
Well, since you brought that up, we actually have a news story that I picked up. And I'm kind of glad our host, Tony Sanders, isn't here to hear this, because he would go ballistic on this one. Dewey Christian, an English teacher at a Denton, Texas high school, assigned students to write a paper, and the topic was, what are you interested in? He reprimanded two senior boys in front of the class, threatening them with zeros if they didn't rewrite their papers on a different subject. Now, what was this offensive subject matter that these two students wrote on? Hunting and the outdoors. One took a trip to Cabela's and wrote how he bought outdoor hunting equipment and that he enjoyed hunting and fishing. And the other young man wrote about going to a gun show in Fort Worth. Mm. This professor, or not even a professor, I'm sorry, this teacher, basically chastised these two young men for writing about the outdoors. Now, you said there wasn't accessibility for people, and now we've got a supposed educator trying to quash their interest in the outdoors.
What a lot of these people don't realize is how important really hunting and fishing are for our environment. You know, one of my big things at NYU is I always ask my fellow peers and professors now, are you an animal rights activist or are you an environmentalist? Because if you're an environmentalist, like you say you are, you should love hunting and fishing, because nobody's done more for the environment than organizations like Ducks Unlimited, Trout Unlimited. You know, hunters and fishermen don't want to hunt animals till extinction. It would be no good for us. So we're the ones that are putting out the bill. We're footing the bill for conservation. We're the ones that are doing the stream restorations, the wetland restorations. And I always say, you know, hunters and fishermen, they buy a license to go hunting and fishing, and they're putting into the system bird watchers, nature hikers. That's all free. Mountain biking. You don't have to pay to go mountain biking on a trail or to go watch birds in a park. They're not paying into the system, and they're taking advantage of what hunters and fishermen do. So we deserve to enjoy the outdoors just as much as they do. And you know, I just don't think very many environmentalists realize that.
I don't think so either, and I think you've hit the nail on the head with that one as far as going into the aspect of who actually makes a difference. I mean, you get a lot of vocal people out there, and you get a lot of people who have their opinions on the subject, whether they're based in fact or not. But by gosh, they're going to let you know about their opinion. And the problem is, as I've always said, I always had trouble calling myself an environmentalist, because when you hear that word, it automatically comes with this attachment of, oh, he's one of those. Or, you know, they're one of those people. And, you know, I've always said that hunters and anglers need to try and take back the word environmentalist and conservation. So yeah,
I agree totally. And, I mean, I don't want to get too much into a history lesson here, but if you look at who are some of the biggest names in conservation, you look at Teddy Roosevelt, who started the National Park Service. Why did he start the National Park Service? Because he loved hunting and being in the outdoors. Aldo Leopold, who's kind of the grandfather of conservation. What was his passion? Hunting and fishing. You know, James Audubon, who started the Audubon Society. Why did he love birds so much? Because he loved hunting for them. So all these people are all heroes of the environmental movement, and the environmentalists today don't even realize that they got their love for the outdoors from hunting and fishing, not from just looking. So
they were actually out participating in these things and wanted to preserve them for future generations, hopefully.
That's right. Yep.
That's unreal. I can't believe that a teacher in Texas would actually scold students for writing about that, but who knows? We live in a crazy, crazy world right now. So you've got an expedition office here in North Carolina. Now, do you do trips in, you said, near the Davidson, in that area? So you're up in the North Carolina mountains. Are you catching any brookies up in that area? Or?
Yeah, we're targeting some native brookies there. We've got permits in Pisgah National Forest, which is a really large national forest, which the Davidson runs through. And so about half of our trips we spend in the backcountry, where we're actually hiking into some remote rivers that don't get fished very often. And on those streams, we're fishing for the native brook trout, South Appalachian, you know, strand of brook trout there. And we hike in maybe 2-3 days at a time. We live out of our backpacks, cook over the campfire. And some of those streams are just pure brook trout streams, and sometimes they're so small you could jump over them. Sometimes they're about as big as a 2-lane road. But they're definitely great three-weight waters for those guys that like to fish smaller streams. You know, it's really good practice. It's casting into small pools, being real stealth, sneaking up on trout.
A lot of roll casts,
you know, lots of rhododendron down there.
Oh,
so
God, that plant is the bane of my existence. That bush has eaten more of my flies. And the reason I became a really good fly tire?
Yep.
Mountain laurel.
And rhododendron, yep.
I lost so many flies to that. I hate that. I really hate that plant.
Sometimes I feel like I'm casting in a tunnel of rhododendron.
Oh, yeah.
That's where that six or 6.5 foot three weight comes in handy.
I can believe it, because that mountain laurel just drives me nuts. Whenever I see it, my wife looks at my face and knows that I have just this disdain, because it's eaten. I mean, I've lost more flies. I mean, it can be dead of winter, and you're still hooking leaves on that stuff.
Yeah, it just never goes away.
It's amazing. It's amazing how those streams can get choked with it too. Especially a lot of those brook trout streams up in the mountains. I mean, they can just. That laurel can just take over.
Yeah, I mean, you end up having to crawl on your hands and knees even to get to the stream through Mount Laurel sometimes. But
that happened to me when I was an undergraduate. I went to school up in Eastern Kentucky University, and we would chase brook trout up in the mountains of Appalachia in the Daniel Boone National Forest, and we would literally be crawling on our hands and knees through this tangled mess. And, you know, when you're young, or it's easier.
Mm-hmm.
When you start to get a little bit older, you start to think, oh, the heck with this. I'm not going to mess with this. And you go someplace else. Yeah. So that's kind of a young man's game. So I'm glad you're bringing teens up there and not not the grandfathers, as you said earlier.
Yeah, it's definitely it plays well for the teens, because once you get into the river, it's like we just walk upstream, you know, alternating who fishes which hole and catch a whole lot of brook trout that way, and fish in groups of two or three, and just kind of like a game of leapfrog, who gets to fish which hole and make your way upstream. It's a whole lot of fun.
It does sound like a lot of fun. We'll talk about that a little bit more when we come back. In the meantime, give us a call, 267-1023. We will be right back.
I stopped by your place a time or two lately, and you weren't home either.
Well, I'm a busy man, Louie. I got a lot of big deals cooking.
Welcome back to Tony Sanders Outdoors on Talk Radio 102.3 FM. Give us a call, 267-1023, 267-1023, or 1-888-779-8255. Carrying all that stuff out west, I'm sure there's a lot of gear you have to deal with.
That's right, yeah.
There's a ton of gear.
Tons of gear. Trailers full of gear.
Trailers full of gear. Well, you know what you could do? You could get a storage unit at Ultua Mini Storage. They have the setup. You drive up, the gate opens, all you got to do is use your cell phone. Don't even have to roll down your window right now. Don't have to go outdoors, as our Brian said earlier. You don't even have to get out of your car. You can key in the number and access your storage unit 24 hours a day. They have a great facility down there. Here's Tony's plan, and here's my plan. Tony is going to organize his life. He's going to put shelves in these things and organize it by hunting season. My theory is I'm going to load up a kayak in there, have all my fishing stuff. When I need to get my kayak, it's ready to go, loaded on the trailer, and I'm out the door. Give them a call, Ottawa Mini Storage, 238-5967, 238-5967. Or check them out at OtawaMiniStorage.com. They can take care of all your storage needs and help you store your stuff. Also, coming up Saturday, March 16th, at the New Salem Baptist Church, they are having a fish fry. I love fish fries.
Can't beat a fish fry.
I love fish fries. They're going to have pro angler Clay Dyer out there for fun and fellowship, starting at 4:30. Dinner is at 5. For ticket information, call the church office at 842-3078, 842-3078, to hear the inspirational story of angler Clay Dyer. So give them a call and don't miss that. Also coming up on the outdoor calendar, we mentioned earlier today out at Sportsman's Warehouse, the great indoors for those who love the great outdoors, Reloading with David Miller. Saturday, National Wild Turkey Federation Cherokee Chapter is having their dinner out at Chester Frost State Park, 5:30 p.m. That's going to be a great time for everybody. The next weekend, you can go to the SCI Banquet at the Chattanooga Convention Center. That is going to be awesome. They have some wonderful trips and guns available there. That's going to start at 5:30. Also on the 9th, out at Sportsman's Warehouse, 153 and Lee Highway, Craig Boddington is going to be having a book signing from 11 to 12. Also on the 9th, it's going to be Wild Turkey Weekend out at Sportsman's Warehouse on the 9th and the 10th. And on the 9th, drum roll please, they are going to have the balloon pop at Sportsman's Warehouse. Anywhere from 5% off to totally free on your purchase. When you buy something, you pop a balloon, and whatever's inside, that is the discount you get for the first 400 families. That's going to be on the 9th out at Sportsman's Warehouse. That's a lot going on.
That is a lot going on.
When are we going to be able to go fishing? Because there is a lot going on. Now, we were talking about fishing in North Carolina.
and we were sharing some fly tying stuff, my secret patterns and your secret patterns, which will remain secret.
All off air.
Has to be, because we know the secret, and we know the secret fly fisherman's handshake, so yeah. But basically, you can set up a trip for youth or youth and other family members, but you can set that up anywhere, pretty much, they want to go. You mentioned Yellowstone, but primarily in Colorado. Why do you think the West is such a destination for fly fishing?
Well, you know, North Carolina is what I would consider my home waters. I grew up fly fishing there. That's where I cut my fly fishing teeth. But there's definitely something to be said about the West. I mean, just the pure number of trout streams out West is mind-boggling to the East Coast angler when they first get out there. Just about any stream you find while you're driving on a road, if you pull over, cast a line into it, you're probably going to find some trout.
Any ditch you find.
Anything, any body of water, just because how, you know, the cold and fresh the water is out there and how clean it is. And that lends itself really well to doing these teen fly fishing camps, because we can get into some water where people just never even think to fish. You know, we hike a couple miles into the backcountry and we find some high alpine lakes, and we'll be catching cutthroat trout, you know, in the 16 to 22 inch range all day long. And those fish have probably never seen a hook in their entire life. So it's not the most challenging fishing to start these kids off on. You know, they're going to get that instant satisfaction. They're going to catch fish their first day of fishing. And that's really what gets them excited and wants to keep coming back and learn more and keep at it. So
basically, you're ruining them for life.
Yeah.
You've brought them out West. They've caught these huge 16 to 18-inch cutthroats. Now they go back to wherever they're from. And you've got the Davidson River, where you got tight-mouthed,
yeah,
non-fly-eaten, sit there and count the wraps of hackle on your fly trout, whereas, so you're basically ruining the kid.
We're spoiling them a little bit. Yeah, you could definitely say that. I've had some parents make that claim where they come home and I had one example of a student that came from Long Island, and his dad brought him out on a striped bass fishing trip out on the Long Island Sound, and they were fishing for some striped bass out in the salt water.
Wait a second. Let me stop you here. If you're catching those fish off of, like, Montauk area?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
They're not striped bass.
Stripers.
Striper.
That's right. So they were out fishing for some stripers, and, you know, they were catching a few fish here and there, and his son looked at his dad and said, "Dad, this is fun, but it's just not like the fishing out West." And his dad called me the next day and said, "You know, I got to get my kid back out West, because that's all he ever talks about anymore. Every time we go fishing, it's, yeah, but it's not quite that mountain lake that we went to in Colorado, or doesn't quite compare to that the hatches out West. I mean, they're just amazing. Every evening it feels like it's clockwork. The streams are just blanketed in caddisflies, and midday you'll see mayflies flying all over the place, and it's harder to find that or time it correctly on the East Coast. So
you can literally set your watch by the hatches out West. I've fished a lot out West, and the hatch per se that I really enjoy, I love the black caddis hatches, and they come off like clockwork. Mm-hmm. And you know during that time period, if you put on a caddis the right size, you're going to catch something. My favorite is going out in the dead of summer, when you get these strong winds blowing, and the hoppers get blown in, and you get these huge western grasshoppers. So you tie on these huge deer hair or even foam patterns, and you get these trout smashing these huge. That's my idea of dry fly fishing. I don't mess with this other. You know, I mean, if you're going to be a bear, be a grizzly.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Do you get the hopper hatches in the summer?
Oh, we definitely get the hopper hatch. The best part about the hopper hatch is it kind of throws everything you learned about dry fly fishing into the wind. You know,
yeah,
this whole delicate presentations and making sure you don't make any riffles when the fly hits the water. That's tough for kids to learn. But when the hoppers are coming in the midsummer and the wind's blowing and you're in some high alpine meadow and they're getting blown in, it's make the hopper fly, hit the water as loud as possible, make as big of a splash, and the trout just go nuts for it.
Snap it.
Yeah, snap it. Just snap it in there. So we love the hopper hatch for sure.
Yeah, that is my idea of, and you know, as I told you off the air, I'm not really a dry fly fishing guy. I'm kind of I don't really enjoy the, you know, making the delicate cast. I like just, you know, snap it in there and just whip it and, you know, make noise. And, you know, usually if you throw in a hopper, you're going to catch something big. I mean,
yeah,
those fish start to focus in on that one thing. And it's like any other thing around here. We get up, you know, when the shad kill goes on, those fish are hitting nothing but white. I mean, you can throw a shad wrap through there, or you can throw a clouser, or you can throw a streamer, or whatever the case may be. As long as you match the hatch, you're doing good.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite one is that hopper, because you really don't have to be delicate at all. So
that is a nice bonus.
It is. First hour's in the can. It went quick, didn't it?
That was my first hour on radio. Went quick.
It did. The second hour will go even quicker.
All right.
Be sure and stay with us for the second hour of Tony Sanders Outdoors on Talk Radio 102.3 FM.